Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's topic, the unspoken commitment. Our 500th Manager Tools cast, here we go. Folks, stay tuned at the end of this cast for a celebration of our 500th cast and a discussion of our plans for our lead up to our 10th anniversary in June of this year. Many of us sit quietly when one of our projects is causing us to worry, right?
We
can see some things that may go wrong in the next few days, the next few weeks.
Right.
Like, for example, we realize that, you know, our plan requires a resource and that resource is no longer available.
Happens, right?
All the time. We made a mistake. We messed up the schedule, right?
Our schedule was too optimistic, right?
Exactly. Or we know we're going to miss upcoming deadline, even if we don't have to report it yet as missed. Like, for example, our reporting is we need to report it if the next reported task is behind schedule. But we know in our hearts that we're going to miss it, right?
Right. It would be possible to not miss it, but the 17 other priorities we have this week and meetings we have to go to,
right,
and we tell ourselves, yeah, I could work until 2 in the morning, and there's a part of our head going, no, I'm not going to work till 2 in the morning.
Right. I could do it. It's possible, but likely, yeah, it's probably not going to happen.
We quote no, unquote.
Right.
That we're going to miss.
And if you know that, sitting quietly and saying nothing is nothing short of unprofessional.
Yeah.
We're obligated to communicate it, right? We're obligated.
Right. And that's the crux of this cast, because I think there are a lot of young people who don't understand in organizational life that the organizational acceptance today of this quiet, this not speaking up about one's potential lateness, the risk to a project. And guys, when we say risk, to be clear, we're using that as business risk or project risk, not in terms of someone's going to get hurt, but the risk of the delay and the impact on any work that we do and ultimately on the output of the organization. But there are too many people who come in and learn that it's part of the cynicization of the professional workforce today that people just understand that.
Cynicization.
Oh, exactly. New word. That I don't have to speak up, because you speak up and everybody goes like, why would you do that? We don't do that. You didn't have to do that. Don't shoot yourself in the foot kind of thing.
Don't get
yourself in trouble. But in fact, this is an area in the professional workforce, in the adult professional world, whether you're in government or nonprofit or for-profit or anything else, where there is an assumption that you simply don't have to speak up, or put differently, that the culture is to not speak up. And to be clear, we're standing astride history and saying, stop.
Right.
That's wrong. We want you to learn the professional thing, which is remaining silent if you know there is a risk is the equivalent of making an unspoken commitment that you are not at risk. And that's really what it is.
That's right.
And you are taking a risk by not speaking up. The culture essentially blesses it, that less than professional culture in the vast majority of organizations in the world. But we want you to know, in fact, there's a better way.
Yeah. And folks, this, if you feel a little uncomfortable, that's okay.
Right.
All right. So what's the outline? What are we going to talk about today?
Yeah. So silence is confirmation of previous commitments, right? We'll talk about that. And if you have a reasonable expectation of a delay or a failure, you are obligated, or it requires you to communicate in some fashion. That said, our third point is this candor, this professional obligation we have, doesn't require you to fall on your sword. It doesn't require self-immolation. If you're a licensee and download the show notes of the ebook, you'll self-immolation. You are not required to be truthful if, in fact, your boss is going to use that truthfulness against you in a much too harsh way.
Right. I'm glad you said that, because otherwise, I think a lot of folks just wouldn't be able to listen to this, because they're going like, oh, my God. So, folks, we'll get to that. Silence is confirmation of previous commitment. So this is kind of like along the lines of silence is consent, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. It's great. There's a great Latin phrase for that.
I mean, there is communication in your silence, and that is,
yes,
everything's good.
Yeah, he who is silent consents. Yeah. Despite what most of us want to believe, keeping silent about an upcoming miss that we believe there's a risk of missing. We haven't missed yet. It's due Friday. It's now Monday. But we are knowledgeable about the project or the work more than anybody else, and we see an inherent miss coming. Keeping silent about that isn't dodging a bullet. Okay, it actually is. We understand that you believe that it is, and you have ample experience to see that it is.
Well, except it's a boomerang bullet that's going to it's going to turn around and get you in the back later.
When we stay silent, we're not getting lucky because, quote, the spotlight didn't fall on us this time, unquote. And what many of us have lost as our organizations have coarsened is that silence to the organization means, you not speaking, means my previous commitments and communications about this work are still valid right now. And so silence in the face of knowledge of risk is confirmation of positive status previously committed. And look, guys, here's the simple answer. And we use this analogy or we use this comparison all the time. You're a manager. How many times have you told one of your directs, why didn't you tell me?
Right. You know they knew, right?
Right. You discover a weakness. You discover a miss, a fail, a delay, a budget problem, whatever. And by definition, included in that is the knowledge that there is no way this could have happened Friday without someone knowing about it Monday. And when you know they knew in the past, you expect a heads up, a courtesy call, a notice of a change in status, something. It is just a courtesy. And in your head, of course, you're telling yourself, I'm a good person. I'm not going to chop their head off. Now, some of you, that you may not think that about yourself, but in fact, it's not just fear of you that causes people not to speak up. It is the organizational culture that's true everywhere, guys. We're not pointing a finger at you only, because a quarter of a million people are going to listen to this show this week. But people understand that even if they don't fear their boss, they can get away with not doing it because there's no retribution. There's no consequences for that. So the point of this is if you expect it from your directs, if you would say to me, why didn't you tell me, if your directs were doing this to you with a bit of frustration, reciprocity demands that you give that level of information to your boss. With a caveat, you may be a nice person. You may not think your boss is a nice person. And we'll cover that, of course, in point three.
Right. And isn't that at least one of the driving factors of the question, why didn't you tell me? Because now it's late and you're going to have a conversation with your boss. Right?
Potentially.
And your boss has the same needs to know.
Yeah. If you don't give the information to your boss, you have no defense other than your character against your boss's suspicion that you were actively hiding the risk. And this is what some of us don't think about. Oh, I'm not actively hiding. And yet, even though we ask people to assume positive intent, which is, of course, one of our previous bits of guidance, when we think about our directs, when we can surmise reasonably that they knew on Monday about the miss that we're now finding out about on Friday, when something goes from green to red automatically on the web page, on the intranet site where we say follow projects, we immediately think they were actively hiding it. They knew. We know they have to know. They could have easily texted me, easily called me. And unfortunately, your boss probably thinks the same thing of you. And guys, that's more than a missed deadline. And to be clear, the choosing not to communicate about it is really, if we're going to be persnickety, and we know you don't want us to be, it's an integrity fail. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Right? We can put it differently. Failing to communicate a potential miss is a sin of omission. And too many of us, me included, Mike included, guys, we're not pointing the fingers at you, have mistakenly defined failures as things we ourselves caused to happen. But our actions are not all a professional is responsible for. We are not just responsible for what we do. We're also responsible for the outcomes that occur as a result of things we did and did not do. And the military version of this is easy. A commander is responsible for everything his or her unit does or fails to do. Any result, any outcome that happens in an area for which you are responsible, you did that. Okay? And so, because not communicating is a choice leading to an outcome, the fact is you're responsible for the outcome and the choice not to communicate it. Simple as that. Probably too much theory for the typical Manager Tools podcast, but we want you to understand the derivation of why we say our next point, which is if you have a reasonable expectation of a delay or a failure, you're obligated to communicate it.
Right. It's inappropriate to remain silent when you know you're going to miss.
Yeah. we're obligated as professionals to let others in the firm know about the risk we have seen, we predicted. We know better than anyone else. And by the way, folks, if you think your boss knows all the stuff you're working on and exactly what your week looks like and the various choices you're making about, oh, I was going to work on this, but now I got to work on this and I've got an urgent task here and so on, you are smoking crack. Your boss has almost zero insight. Even if he or she is doing one-on-ones with you, he has no clue. And all you have to do to prove that is ask yourself, how much do you really know about what each of your directs is doing? Unless your directs are doing customer service calls and sitting at their desk all day, except for their mandatory break times, the vast majority of people whose people have, if you're supervising knowledge workers, you admit it, you don't know what they're doing. And if they don't know, if you don't know what they're doing, your boss doesn't know what you're doing. So let's get to the heart of it. What do we do? What do we say? First of all, if your organization has a system for reporting project status, like a red, amber, green, a RAG report, or some sort of stoplight, or a round robin, a weekly project meeting, a verbal round robin where everybody reports and they have to say we're green or we're not, or as I sat in one meeting, it's been 2 or 3 years ago, this project is fine. I thought, my God, they're spending 2 hours to have 8 or 9 project managers literally admit this project is fine. And there's no formal definition of fine. It's like,
I'm feeling good about it.
This is literally a... It's like a science fiction movie. It's that bad. It goes past farce. Anyway, if you have that kind of system for reporting project status, obviously that's the place to communicate a miss or risk.
Yeah, don't dream of some other way of doing it, right?
Yeah, exactly. When your work or project falls clearly into a category that your organization recognizes or propagates, as you understand it, that's where it goes. So if it says the definition of yellow is this, and when you read that definition, you say, that's where my project is, regardless of the embarrassment or loss of professional reputation that you might suffer, recognizing we'll give you a caveat and out here in a little bit, that is where you're obligated to put it.
Right. I had somebody one time tell me in an email, right, said, hey, I'm reporting this project as green, but I just wanted to let you know there's a risk associated with this particular person delivering what they're supposed to. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Really. Seriously? So now we have red, we have green, yellow, red, and we have green, but not really green.
Yeah. Well, it's like saying, I want you to know we're engaged, but I want to be clear, we're not getting married. Or, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a little bit pregnant.
Yeah. Good. Now, that said, there's nothing wrong with reporting yellow or red, not green, but yellow or red, and then expressing predicted risks verbally, right, as opposed to the yellow or red, and then describing actions to mitigate the problem. So you might say, folks, I'm reporting yellow on the conference cost reduction project. Sorry for the delays. Here's what I'm doing. I'm confident we'll be back on track in 2 weeks. Okay, so it's okay to do that, to combine status, a not desired status, in other words, something other than green, with mitigation.
Right. Not only okay, it's recommended, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Of course. Yeah, we recommend it. But here's the mistake. People say, well, what Horstman said, what Ozan said, is you can talk about what you're doing. So therefore, to make it a little bit less uncomfortable for me, I'm simply going to say, because I am doing those things, and because I am confident we'll be back on track in 2 weeks, and because of the course of this 30-week or 40-week project, we're only going to have this one dip into yellow, I'm simply going to say, my belief is I can overcome this at some point, and therefore I don't have to report yellow. And they say, in fact, a guy told me once, Mark, if I technically am yellow, but I have a plan, the yellow and the plan cancel each other out. My boss doesn't want that level of detail. I'm going to report green. But that's like saying, I have my shoes on if you're late to getting dressed, when in fact you don't have your shoes on. The truth of your shoes being on or off is a discrete thing. It is, they're either on or off. And so saying, I have my shoes on, when that's not true, in order to make people feel comfortable that you're going to be on time, is false. You could leave that out and say, I'll be on time. But then if I ask you, do you have your shoes on? You're obligated to say no, because professionals speak the truth.
It's true, right? It's a fact, right?
Yeah, it's a fact, exactly. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's which always, whenever we talk about truth on the show, I'm reminded of one of my favorite movies of all time, Absence of Malice, which stars Paul Newman and Sally Field. And the show is completely stolen by Wilford Brimley at the end of it, who plays a federal prosecutor or a judge, I think. And there's a point at which Sally Field is interviewing somebody, and she asks a question, and the person responds, and she says to her, "That's true, right?" The reporter says, "Right," because the reporter is learning that truth and what people say are perhaps two different things. But yeah, your shoes being on or off is a fact, which leads to truth. Yeah, and look, too many managers today. And folks, we know that you do it, and we do it, and we know it's normal, and our organizations tolerate it. We say, yeah, technically it's yellow, but because I'm doing stuff, it's going to be okay. And guys, this is sophistry. It's far better to be conservative. We understand that we're introducing a risk to you, but it's far better to be conservative, downgrade your status, and admit it, than being seen as misleading to avoid consequences.
Right. You also don't get to invent a reason that is technically accurate, but misleading as to why a project would be green versus yellow, or yellow versus red.
And, exactly.
And people do that too frequently. I'm not going to say all the time, too frequently.
Yeah. Guys, anytime you have to torture the language that you speak to prove your point, it's your point that's the problem, not the language. Okay. And guys, and look, let's be fair. There are hundreds of definitions out there for what green means or what red is. And by the way, we don't want to make this cast about green, yellow, red, or amber, red, amber, green.
Right. And I talked about facts earlier. I mean, there is judgment involved in projects. Yes. There is judgment involved in whether you're green or yellow, right?
Yeah. And I think there are a lot of managers that at some point discover part of their growth of wisdom is to realize that I've got some guys who are working for me who report that they're fine when in fact they're not. And now what I'm going to do is talk to them about their judgment. About the judgment of what they communicated, or about their judgment about whether or not their intervention in a project eliminates the risk to the project and whether or not I should know about it. But you're right, whether a project is clearly or substantially, both words that there are thousands of the definitions of red and amber and green in the world today, and they include words like clearly or substantially or wholly and so on. And those are all judgment calls, and different people could make different decisions.
Right. You see a lot in legislation. Right?
Yeah.
And you immediately don't trust it.
Right. Yeah. And look, and there are also hundreds of ways of sharing verbally. And the difference in definitions of words are often poorly understood, and therefore they're often misused, sometimes intentionally, sometimes not. So look, guys, when in doubt, follow the best distilled guidance on reporting status. If there is any doubt about your status, report the lower, less desirable one. And this passes that old-fashioned New York Times or Wall Street Journal headline test. Before you do something, ask yourself whether or not you'd want everyone to read about it tomorrow as a headline in the Times or the Journal. And by the way, this also helps you avoid one of the worst reporting gaffes there is. Going from green or fine or okay to red in the next without ever mentioning risks or being yellow at all. And guys, when you become an executive, going from green to red, not only does that tend to get executive attention, which we understand that sometimes you don't want, it gets attention not just about the project, but about what was misleading before.
That's
or
right.
Who has been mismanaging so badly that they couldn't have seen that maybe I could have done something. I can't tell you the number of times that people say to me, yeah, we've been trying to get you in here for years, selling our corporate training services. And then my boss's boss listened to one of the casts on a lark and said, this is actually pretty good. I've got that budget. It's no problem. When in fact, that very person had been requested for budget two levels down from somebody at a managerial or director level and had been denied. And then suddenly the executive was able to say, oh yeah, we'll do that. Because he hadn't been willing to part with the budget until he knew what he was doing. Same thing here. You want to avoid imperial entanglements in your projects. But in fact, there can be good involvement and bad involvement. And we understand that, but it should always be embarrassing to you to go from green to red. Because if you're the steward of a project, you're supposed to understand the risks. And not seeing the risks makes me as an executive go, maybe I gave him too big a project, that he doesn't understand that he's not responsible for where we are today. He's responsible for predicting the future about workloads and responsibilities and potential other interventions that may cause problems, and be candid about it so the organization can adjust. And so generally, reporting concerns earlier at easier to fix levels of worry is better.
Agreed.
And Mike, if you don't mind, I want to share with everybody something else. I shared this story with a guy a couple of weeks ago, and I was at a client, and his mouth hung open when I told him this about communication. I was talking to an executive who was weak on communication skills, and he told me, frankly, he didn't feel that he had a need to communicate. And project status is just communication, guys. That's what it is. And so, guys, it may be helpful to remember why this kind of communication can't be professionally omitted, right? The sin of omission. Communication, even if you're not used to it or you don't like it, if you're a D or a C in DISC world and you're not naturally comfortable communicating or wanting to communicate with others, communication becomes a necessary part of any organization once the organization grows from 1 to 2 employees, okay? The story I told this executive, which I think he thought was dumb, but which he could not avoid the conclusion of, was think about a shoemaker, a cobbler who works alone. He works on one pair of shoes at a time. He does all the work himself. There is no interpersonal communication required to provide value to his customers other than when they come in and when they leave. But this cobbler's good. He succeeds. He grows. He comes to believe that there's enough demand for his work to allow him to pay an apprentice to assist him. Okay. And by the way, guys, if you think this is a story about a cobbler and not organizational growth, you're mistaken. Okay. Now, the cobbler says it will cost him the apprentice's wages, but he believes the additional work he'll be able to accomplish with two pairs of hands on the shoes he's making will be worth more than the cost. He'll bring in more revenue than the apprentice costs him, and he'll end up making more money. Unfortunately, the cobbler has been working by himself for a number of years, and he's learned over the years he's comfortable not being a talkative man. He enjoys the solitude of his work. So he continues to do what he has, and he does what has in part made him successful, and he doesn't talk to the apprentice. And frustratingly for him, his plans for growth fail because of the inefficiencies created, which I'm sure everybody can figure out, by the lack of communication about what essentially in a cobbler shop with two people is work in progress. You know, has the apprentice finished the work on the vamp of the shoe? Has the sole been double tacked yet? How long was the leather treated? He doesn't ask. He doesn't know. The apprentice follows his lead and doesn't communicate as well. The apprentice repeats much work. The cobbler has to repeat much work. And you end up eliminating the value that the apprentice might have added while still incurring the costs. Working in an organization allows for significant magnification of human effort through specialization of labor. Sociologists will tell you that large organizations, guys, are the sine qua non of human existence. But that magnification of effort and specialization of labor doesn't happen only because there are more people. It happens because there are more people who communicate about the work they're doing to create the output.
Yeah.
Two people in a room without communication, there might as well not be two people in the room.
Yeah, I guess you couldn't have large organizations without communication, could you?
Yeah, it is. Communication is the first necessary skill of organizational professionalism. And failing to communicate is denying one's first responsibility. And if you think of yourself as not a natural communicator, the organization, guys, doesn't care. It doesn't. It expects it. It expects a minimum. Now, once you reach the minimum, if you're not a super outgoing person, you don't want to communicate any more than the minimum, okay, fine. But I got to tell you, folks, if you want to be an executive, you better be good at it, because all executive life turns on communication. Not decisions, but communications.
Okay, all that said, right, you don't have to set yourself on fire, right? I mean, it doesn't require self-immolation.
Yeah, because we know what we're doing. We're asking you to behave like a professional. We're recommending you behave like a professional when, in fact, the culture supports a somewhat less than professional comportment. There are managers. I think most listeners think, oh, that's my manager. But in fact, I don't think it's that bad. I think your fear of your manager is probably grossly overrated. But that said, there is the rare manager who punishes the communication of bad news or punishes less than ideal status updates. She creates a culture where nobody will be candid about risks because the professional approach, hey, I'm yellow here, because the whole point of having green, yellow, red is to determine whether or not resources or choices need to be considered, that it'll be punished. Now, look, your boss doing this is wrong. You can have a high performance culture without fear of beheadings, without fear of job risk, you know, essentially existential risk, professionally speaking. It's unprofessional to do this. But guys, remember something. There's a rule we've talked about before in professional life. Your honesty can't be used against you, okay?
Right.
If there is a long-standing pattern in your organization of giving soft status reports, which is to say overstating status in a positive way, because of that fear of retribution, we understand your temptation to follow the crowd.
Right.
So we recommend you test the waters carefully to see if the fears of your colleagues are justified. One way to do this, of course, is if you're a manager, repeatedly remind your folks, I'd rather find out early. I'd rather find out early. And if you keep getting statuses that you get the impression are soft, game the system a little bit. Tell one of your directs to let one of his projects go yellow. Choose one of the better ones and have him go yellow on purpose. Say, dude, don't work on that project for a week, and go yellow, and then report yellow. And give me a stage upon which to say, okay, hey, thanks. I appreciate this. Guys, I've been telling you before, going from green to red is bad. And you think I'm punishing you for going red? I'm not. I'm talking to you about your lack of communication. So thank you, Bob, for talking yellow. Let's talk about what we need to do about it. And several of those would gradually, hopefully, begin to break the ice, and your people will begin to be more comfortable with you.
That's right. If you continue to ask and people don't, you really should at least sit back and think about your behavior, and are you sending a message that is not acceptable, right? I mean, it may not be your direct's fault. It may be your fault, in fact, relative to how you react when people give you bad news.
Yeah. When there's a problem in your organization, search for the cause of the problem in increasingly larger concentric circles around your own desk.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as far as it relates to your director or your boss, decide whether or not you get punished for honest reporting. Talk to your colleagues, ask them, you know, I know everybody's afraid of that. I know we overstate things. I mean, do we really have justification? Did somebody get fired, or was somebody in a lot of trouble?
Is there behavior that supports their conclusion?
Yeah.
And if not.
Right? And then maybe go to your boss on Monday and say, look, I think I want to report yellow on Friday. If I had to guess what my status is on Friday, I think it's going to be yellow. And I'm using yellow as a proxy for any sort of risk reporting at a later date. And I want to know what you want to do about it. And if your boss says, well, you better be green by then, okay, that should mean something to you. And hopefully you don't do that to your directs. But find out. And then if he does that, say, okay, I'll report green and I'll be soft about it. Or I'll bust my tail and I'll report green. And then I'll realize, okay, manager tools suggest, market mark suggests I do this. And there is existential risk here, and I'm worried about it. And only you can know what your organization is like. It has been my experience the vast majority of people overstate what their boss will do. And I've been in meetings where there was the expectation of an explanation or whatever, and maybe it was because I was in the room, but I didn't see it. The boss sort of gets frustrated and says, okay, what are we going to do about it? And people say to me, see what he did? I'm like, dude. Yeah. If you work for me and you go, I get a moment of frustration. And then when I say, okay, let's talk about what we're going to do about it, that's me forgiving.
Yeah. It's not fair to expect absolutely zero emotion or giddiness over the fact that you're yellow.
Yeah. And look, if you want to be honest and you're in a culture that essentially tolerates dishonesty and your boss continues this punishment and so on of honesty and so on, protect yourself, adapt the culture. And or get your resume ready and warm your network up. And we have podcasts for those, as you might imagine. And folks, going back to the point about your honesty being used against you, If I report being late because I'm late, and then I get fired for repeated failure to meet deadlines, that's not an instance of having my honesty used against me because I reported my lateness. I'm being fired for not doing my job. It happens when somebody tells the truth about mistake. Rumors fly that he got fired for being honest because that's dramatic. Okay? That's us against the man. When in fact, he got fired for the mistake and his honesty didn't save him.
Right.
We're not recommending you be honest to save yourself. We're recommending you be honest because it's the right thing to do. Hopefully, you already know the manager tool's stance on delivering results, right? That's your first responsibility. But it is not a first responsibility that trumps your overarching responsibility as a citizen of professional life, which is to say, we tell the truth. And there is risk. I talked to one guy once that says, you know, I started listening to you guys, and the single biggest thing I learned in the first couple of years is you kept insisting on being honest and telling the truth. And I started doing it, and I discovered in order to be truthful, I had to up my game in results.
Yeah. Okay.
Because there was still organizational risk about being honest about my failures when everybody else was failing too, but they were just hiding it.
Yeah. That's it, right?
Yeah. So summing up, guys, it's easier and safer for us to not admit we're behind or to not admit we planned poorly. But if we don't admit it, if we don't report it, what we're doing is making a choice to put ourselves above the organization. And if everybody does that too much, we get what we have today, really enormous dysfunction in organizations. The right call is to be candid, to admit a risk or a failure coming up. And yeah, you might get in trouble. But you might get in trouble in the future too for failing and also for concealing what you had to have known, seeing it coming in advance. And that failure is going to haunt you for a long, longer time than being honest on the front end. And at the same time, don't commit suicide because your boss doesn't embrace these kinds of ideas.
Yeah, well said.
And that ends our 500th podcast.
But wait, there's more. Let's talk a little bit. Our 500th cast. That's a few in the podcasting world. That's a few, I think.
Yeah, and we've been talking about this for a while. And of course, there's Career Tools Cast, and there are a number of different ways to count podcasts. And we have determined based on our count that this is our 500th. And there are an awful lot of podcasts that have come and gone that never get to 500. It's a good rough instance of 10 years. So in preparing for the celebration of our 10th anniversary, we have a couple of product announcements.
And we're excited about them. Tell us about the first one, because I think people really, particularly if you're a licensee, you're going to get excited about this one.
Well, we're constantly hearing from people in the field about how their world is changing. And when you look back 10 years ago to when podcasts starting, at least in some sense that it became popular, people started realizing about it, the adoption of podcasts in iTunes, for instance, the world has changed. There wasn't a mobile world with apps and smartphones 10 years ago, but there is now. And so we're announcing that the Manager Tools app will be upgraded between now and June. And for those of you who are licensees, your license will allow you to log into the app and all of the show notes for Manager Tools and Career Tools will be in the app, even offline. Okay? Text files don't take up that much space. And we know you want access to the written materials, all the show notes, at all times, anywhere you want, not having to go back to your desk, not having to go through your archive of downloaded show notes. And we want to save you the trouble of downloading. We want to give them all to you. And if you're not a licensee, you won't have access to them, but you'll still have access to all the other functionality of the app. But we know our licensees like being able to get material, like being able to share it with other people, perhaps pass their phone and say, look, listen to look at this podcast. Look at this guidance here. There's a podcast too, but if you want, just take 10 minutes, read these show notes real quick, and it'll tell you exactly what to do in that situation. There will be further upgrades to the app. This is the first of several planned upgrades, but we know the world is becoming mobile, and we know you want access to our stuff when you want it. And this is the first step toward providing that.
You implied something in the way you said it that we probably need to make absolutely clear. You said upgrades to our mobile app. You didn't say upgrades to our iOS app or our Apple app.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. You said to our app. So that implies that it might be available on something other than an iPhone?
On everything.
So, okay. So iPhone?
Android.
How about Android?
Yeah.
How about BlackBerry?
Yeah.
And Windows Mobile?
Yep.
All right, folks, there you have it.
Yeah. And by the way, folks, Mike is asking me. I'm the one saying it. But what's funny about that is Mike is the one doing the work. The content's created, but this kind of project for us and transitioning to essentially more manager tools and career tools ubiquity for you, the user, based on stories you're telling us about how you use our stuff. This is to make it easier for you to do your job, and we're simply catching up.
Yeah. So we're pretty excited about that. In large, we get a lot of requests for being available on Android. Obviously, that's the big one that we don't support today.
Right.
So that's on the way. So for those of you who are not iOS users, you'll be pleased to hear that it's going to be available on other platforms. So that's big in and of itself, I think. But there's more.
Right. So by June of this year, on our 10th anniversary, a video version of our Effective Manager Conference will be available. We haven't figured out pricing yet or availability, but those of you who want to be able to send somebody to a video version of our conference will be able to do so online as well. The complete Effective Manager Conference with practice and so on. And we're working on the provisioning of it and the presentation of it, but all of the material is created, and it's simply a matter of putting the final packaging together. And we commit that we will have that to you by June.
Yeah. And we think this is going to go a long ways of the community helping folks become better managers. It's pretty exciting.
So, folks, we'd like to end with this. Mike and I started Manager Tools and then added the Career Tools podcast as well, because our mission is to make every manager in the world effective and every professional productive. There's an enormous amount of human potential in the world that probably doesn't get captured because of how organizations are run and how ineffective we all are as managers. And mainly, it's not because we don't want to be better. It's because so many of us don't know how. And we're creating a repository of information so that any manager at any time, anywhere in the world, or any professional for that matter, can improve their skills to help the organization. We talk about our mission about helping managers. We believe that we can change the world. We're not often clear that what we're trying to do is help you be more effective so that you can change the world. All we're doing is providing you the information. It takes your spark of willingness to work harder and to change your behavior to get out of a rut. And our success, the longevity of our cast, the hundreds of millions, I think we're somewhere between 200 and 300, if we haven't already passed 300 million downloads of our materials, is a testament to your willingness to try and be better. The fact is, we're not changing the world. You are. And it's our job to make it easier for you to do that. And as we celebrate leading up to our 10th year, I think Mike and I are even more excited about the next 10 years and providing you easier, faster, better ways to help you change the world with your directs and then hopefully get promoted and have yet still more directs, because organizations, large organizations, are important. The engine of those organizations are the heart and soul and creativity of the people in them. And unlocking some of that is what we stand behind you helping you do. And it's, as I've said to many people, we've said to many people over the years, it is still a privilege and even more of a treat than it was when we first started 10 years ago.
Yeah, well said. Thanks, folks, for helping us and allowing us to be part of the cause of changing the world. I can't even begin to tell you how much that means to us. So thank you.
So I'll leave this cast telling you all I have a big smile on my face and I won't actually talk.
All right, friends. We'll talk to you soon.